Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. 3, 2, 1. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Dom, today is Kenosha 2-Year Anniversary Tuesday.
Wow.
The 2-year anniversary of lots of civil strife. Jacob Black, he got shot in the back multiple times by local police. And obviously, there were problems that stem from there, Dom. And we're going to talk about it. You're going to, fact check Rojo. U.S. Senator Ron Johnson is out there telling lies today, kind of like your buddy CJ did yesterday on the air.
Well, you know, we like the facts around here, even if they go with us or against us, what our sensibilities might be. Facts are facts. And yes, you got to push back. You got to identify what they are, when they are. And so we can contradict and prove that what some people say, some Republicans, like some callers like CJ, some senators like Trump and some political parties like the GOP, how they claim Governor Evers reacted in real time. We will get into that.
You said Trump was a senator. I think you meant Rojo.
I'm sorry, Rojo.
I got the point. Talked about Trump. So the latest, Dom, and we'll get there in just a minute, but Trump's defense is to, confess? These are the best and the brightest lawyers this man can find? He confessed in a court filing. He effectively confessed to the crime. I'll tell you all about it. We'll come back. Also, Tony Evers, good news, everybody. We're all getting tax cuts. Well, Tony proposes that we all get tax cuts. You know, big surplus running here in the state of Wisconsin. Do you think the Republicans will see a Tony's way and give us all tax cuts? I thought they were all down for tax cuts, unless it's a midterm election year, in which case, you know, they're going to be very scarce with the tax cuts. I bet they gavel in, gavel out. No tax cuts for you, Salvia.
Ah, come on. Republicans, they cannot help themselves. They love some tax cuts. But if they don't go to the wealthy, you're right. They may be, you know, less than eager to get that signed up and give Governor Evers a win before the primary, but before the elections, you know, that's how that happens. But is Evers playing politics by doing this now? I mean, he could have done it months ago, right? So it goes all the way around.
It does. We got Dr. Harvey K coming round to talk a little politics at the bottom of this hour at 4:30. But Dom, let's get back to Trump. The headline at the Washington Post. Now, this is, you know, a column. This is not a factual headline, but Trump's risk of indictment for his document snatch just skyrocketed. Oh, yeah, it's going up. The percentages, Dom, the betting line, it's going up. Yeah. Jennifer Rubin reports at the Post. When U.S. Magistrate Judge Bruce Reinhardt initially indicated he was disposed to unsealing the affidavit accompanying the search warrant executed at former President Donald Trump's Mar-a-Lago home, former prosecutors and legal experts were surprised, to put it mildly. Now it appears we are unlikely to see much, if anything, from the affidavit for good reason. On Monday, Reinhardt issued a ruling noting, and this is a quote from the ruling, one of the statutes for which I found probable cause prohibits obstructing an investigation. Also, as some of the media interveners have reported, there have been increased threats against FBI personnel since the search. Now, Rubin's back to writing. He therefore found that, given the public notoriety and controversy about this search, it is likely that even witnesses who are not expressly named in the affidavit would be quickly and broadly identified over social media and other communication channels, which could lead to them being harassed and intimidated. In other words, Rubin writes, the MAGA campaign of incitement against law enforcement should weigh heavily against disclosure. Now, Blue Lives Matter? Thin blue line.
Not if it's Trump, it doesn't matter. I mean, they proved that and they continue to live that philosophy.
Dominic Reinhart continued, again, I quote, "The affidavit discloses the sources and methods used by the government in its ongoing investigation. I agree with the government that the affidavit contains, among other critically important and detailed investigative facts, highly sensitive information about witnesses, probably Jared, including witnesses interviewed by the government, specific investigative techniques, and information required by law to be kept under seal." Got to seal it, really, for Trump's own protection. And, of course, the witnesses that MAGA World will right. hang like they would Mike Pence. Reinhart therefore concluded, "Government has a compelling reason not to publicize that information at this time." Reinhart agreed to consider whether a redacted affidavit might be released, but his opinion strongly suggests that nothing significant would be revealed. And while Trump has filed a preposterous lawsuit seeking to freeze on the examination of the recovered documents, he is unlikely to shift attention from this blockbuster revelation from the New York Times. You want to do the blockbuster, yes, Dom? Bring the blockbuster, fella.
Here's the blockbuster revelation from the New York Times.
You're still renting movies at Blockbuster, but go ahead.
"In total, the government has recovered more than 300 documents with classified markings from Mr. Trump since he left office," multiple people briefed on the matter said. "That first batch of documents returned in January, another set provided by Mr. Trump's aides to the Justice Department in June, and then the material seized by the FBI in the search this month." Now, Rubin goes back to her writing. "The sheer number of documents previously recovered and their sources from the CIA, FBI, and the NSA raises the stakes considerably for Trump, undercutting his followers' frivolous excuses and ludicrous accusations of an FBI plot to persecute him. Even more incriminating, the Times reports, Mr. Trump went through the boxes himself in late 2021, meaning he was clearly aware of the contents and could view the classification markings. If the FBI and Justice Department are looking for evidence of Trump's direct knowledge of the materials and willful refusal to return all of them, this would fit the bill. If, contrary to what Trump's counsel said, the government did not previously get back all sensitive materials, the only logical conclusion would be that Trump refused to part with the documents he falsely told aides were mine. This might be the rare case when Trump lacks even a plausible deniability, of course, the ability to shift blame to his attorney. If the facts are as damning as they appear," Rubin writes, "Trump's risk of indictment is quite high. After the evidence is gathered, Attorney General Merrick Garland will need to decide whether to pursue an indictment from the grand jury. With a discrete set of facts that a jury can easily comprehend, powerful evidence of Trump's willfulness, and the clear interest in protecting the nation's secrets, Garland will have every incentive to proceed and surely not wait until the exponentially more complicated January 6th investigation concludes," Jennifer Rubin writes today. And I would add to that, just a few hours ago, Reuters is reporting that the U.S. National Archives discovered more than 700 pages of classified documents at Trump's Florida home, in addition to the materials this month by the FBI, according to that very same letter provided by Trump's representative to the National Archives, John Solomon, you know, the disgraced former Hill contributor, that guy.
No, it goes on Hannity quite a bit. They like him over on Righty Whitey Talk Radio. Dom, here's a little bit more on the motion filed by the Trump legal team. What a fine team they are. Former President Donald Trump and his legal team have filed a motion asking a federal judge to pause the FBI's review of the alleged classified documents taken from the Mar-a-Lago resort so a neutral special master can be appointed to inspect them. The motion was included in a federal lawsuit filed by Trump targeting the FBI's justification for the August 8th raid. According to reports, Trump's more than 300 classified documents at his Palm Beach resort that he allegedly took from the White House at the end of his tenure. But in new developments today, the judge overseeing the case gave Trump and his legal team until Friday to give more specifics as to why they think their motion should be granted.
They need to take their homework back and redo it?
Judge Eileen Cannon seemed skeptical about Trump's lawsuit over the search of Mar-a-Lago including what exactly he's trying to do and why he filed a separate case instead of just asking Judge Bruce Reinhart to address his grievances in the existing matter, according to New York Times reporter Charlie Savage. The judge assigned to Trump's civil complaint is basically telling them they need to do better. As CBS News' Steve Portney pointed out, the judge wants Trump's legal team to provide the asserted basis for the exercise of this court's jurisdiction, the precise relief sought, including any request for injunctive relief, and the effect, if any, of the proceeding before Magistrate Judge Bruce Reinhart. This order is hilarious, added David French of the Dispatch. Any decent litigator would read it and shudder. Basically, the judge is saying to the Trump team, do your freaking job. Translation, Trump's motion is a mess, and the judge needs them to spell out exactly what they were asking for and why they think they're entitled to that relief, tweeted by Rinaldo Mariotta, a former federal prosecutor. You got to do better, Dom.
You got to do it over. Nope, I can't accept this. You have to do it over. Please bring it back typed and double-spaced. Your crayons don't work. What an embarrassment. So, Crudy, I mean, all this going on, I got to ask you, does it look like, does it feel like, does it? Do you get the sense that perhaps these are more than mere paper crimes?
No. No, it's still paper crimes.
These are still paper crimes to you.
Relative to a coup against the government, a coup against democracy, a coup against the vice presidency, a coup against the peaceful transfer of power. That is all I want history to judge
Donald
Trump for.
If these are the most, in fact, most important, most sensitive documents on earth as it pertains to the United States and our national security, these are the top 300 documents. You think that's just a paper crime? You don't think there's anything more than that?
They are literally pieces of paper. It is a paper crime. And that is how it will be
pieces of paper.
Let me, if I could, that is how it will be described by history and by the Trump supportive. So if you want to hang him high, if you think he's guilty, charge the crime, the real crime, the crime against history, against democracy. And let's leave the stolen documents down at Mar-a-Lago out of it. Because you're never going to convince the faithful, the cult, that that is a legitimate crime. I'm just saying.
More devils. Wrong. You've never been more wrong. I'm shocked, Crudy.
You used many, many bad words.
And they admitted it in the hearing.
Believe me, it is absolutely 150%.
The Devil's Advocates. Never personal, only politics.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. Phone lines are open before Professor Harvey K joins us at the bottom of the hour at 844-967-2789.
Dominic, it's not that I don't think we should take these crimes seriously. Don't misunderstand what I'm saying. It's not that your buddy Crudy doesn't care.
Oh, no, of course. I get that. I think, but I'm sorry, finish your thought. I don't want to interrupt.
I'm saying, in the terms of history, in the crimes that this man is guilty of, the stealing of super classified documents, probably one of his lesser sins. I'm just saying, to my perception, any other human being should go to jail for this. But Trump will not, to my opinion, go to jail for quote unquote paperwork crimes. And if he did, I would fully expect a violent reaction from the Trumpist. And I'm not saying I encourage that. I'm not rooting for it. I'm just saying that is how they would react. Well, they would see this.
They're already reacting that way, right? I mean, we've seen the insurrection. We've seen the attack on the FBI. We've seen how the Trumpsters have reacted. Hell, we got an
indict him for
a coup in Michigan today for the trying to kidnap and
not against Trump.
No, I get it. But these are the Trumpsters we're talking about. So let me address what your concern is. That concern is going to be there regardless of what the particular crime and all of them together. He probably will be charged if they can find evidence for it. So they're going to get violent again, regardless if it's the top secret stealing documents, if it's the insurrection and the seditious conspiracy, if it's the civil action against Trump Organization, if it's criminal fraud in the state of New York, if it's the Georgia, if you can only find me 11,780 votes phone call, the Trumpster reaction is going to be consistent. They're going to be violent. That's what they do.
So it's a lot easier to present. I mean, seriously, you got Donald Trump claiming, oh, I tweeted out, I declassified everything. Even though Mark Meadows, his former chief of staff, has said in sworn testimony, of course, you can't declassify every document via tweet. Okay, but that will be his defense. That will be his claim, right? He'll be out there lying. Just well, like he always does.
I mean, he's got to, if he gets in front of a jury, right? I mean, the jury is going to make that determination, and he can say whatever
when
the hell he
wants.
When he
gets in front of a jury,
in any of that information released by Solomon, there was no indication that anything was declassified, even if that mattered. So, I mean, Trump's going to lie, and his backers are going to be violent. We can just take those as assumptions, man. So we can't make determinations,
or
certainly the Department of Justice should not make determinations. And if you believe what we just read on Rubin, I'm kind of with her on this. This is pretty easy. Here's the stuff no one's supposed to have. Here's the stuff that Trump took. Here's all the efforts we went through to get it back. Here's how he went through it personally, shifted some stuff into some other boxes and stuck it in a briefcase or in a container in his office closet, and then claimed that they gave everything back. That's pretty easy, man. And I think to that point, that's a lot less convoluted than the incitement of the riot activity that's still being investigated.
Well, if you accompany it with the, you know, evidence, let's say, because I would say if you charge the man, and I think he's merited being charged with incitement against the United States government, seditious conspiracy, something of the sort. I think there are violent charges. To me, this feels like, you know, it's Bonnie and Clyde robbing the bank, and you're charging them with the paperwork they stole in the teller bag. What about the robbing the bank and shooting the teller? You know, let's deal with the crimes that are tangible and violent. And we all as a nation saw it happen before our very eyes. And I have no doubt the man stole paperwork. I have no doubt. But they're going to play it like it's Hillary's emails, right? Well, they didn't lock up Hillary. But you know what? Hillary never perpetrated a coup against the U.S. government, as far as I can tell. So Donald Trump's sort of unique, unprecedented in that regard. And that is the sort of thing that inspires the violence. It's the willingness of the man to inspire the violence. So my only point is, if you're going to allow him to inspire violence, if you're going to charge this man, and that's going to result in violence against the U.S., against the people, lone wolves, crazy bastards, if that's all going to happen, let's not make it over the paperwork trial. Let's make it over the indictment against the coup, against the U.S. government.
You charge the crime you're ready to charge when you're ready to charge it. And there's lots of crimes that are being investigated that Donald Trump is involved with. And I certainly don't think
prosecutorial discretion
is going to then decide, well, you know, they might get really violent if we charge with this one. It'll be less violent if we charge this. And then so we'll charge this. I don't think that's a logical line
okay,
of thinking
set aside
for an independent Department of Justice, Crudy.
Set aside the probable violence, no matter what the indictment is.
Yes, okay.
Let's set aside the violence. Let's set aside
the
caution the attorney general might have. Let's set aside the fact the guy probably stole all this documented paperwork to threaten the U.S. government. If you indict me, I'm turning this stuff over to a foreign power. You know that's the threat. You know that's why he stole the stuff. That or he thought
trying to blackmail this country.
Yes.
You think he can get away with that? I mean, that's ridiculous. That's absolutely ridiculous. How do you blackmail an entire country? Just one more thing here, Curtis. Before
you take enough secrets out of the White House.
Well, see, then that becomes a big crime, dude. I mean, that becomes a serious crime. It doesn't matter
when they charge
you
with the blackmailing of the country,
or if it's in the cloud. You know, and how? I mean, Trump's had a year and a half to disseminate this stuff, to copy it, to take pictures, and God knows do what with it. We don't know what they did with it. We also know
show us golfing buddies. You know what he did with it.
Yesterday, that they're now asking, the DOJ is asking for more surveillance footage. So there's more to come from that. But let me just throw out there the conclusion of a political piece from today. It was reported earlier this month that some of the documents in Trump's possession related to nuclear weapons and special access program materials. At the time, Trump GOP allies held their fire until they could hear directly from the National Archives. At least one Republican lawmaker noted that this specific scenario would be problematic. Here's what Rep. Chris Stewart, a Republican from Ohio, a member of the House Intelligence Committee, had to say. I mean, if he had actual special access programs, do you know how extraordinarily sensitive that is? That's very, very sensitive. If that were actually in his residence, that would be a problem, said the Republican House Committee member Chris Stewart. It's problematic, and it's not getting better for him on this front. I think this is a real easy slam dunk. He's got the docs. They're in his possession. He's not supposed to have them. They've had, you know, documented conversations for, what, a year, year and a half?
Come on, man. I've been watching this guy break laws in public plain view. I mean, why did he fire Comey? Really? He said it to Lester Holt on NBC. Come back. Fine guest, Harvey K.
Listening to the radio show your mother warned you about, The Devil's Advocates.
Welcome back to The Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the Tuesday edition. We welcome back fine guest, Dr. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus, University of Wisconsin, Green Bay, one of my favorite Packer fans. Welcome back, Harvey.
Hey, Harvey.
Thank you, and I'm so glad you said it was Tuesday. I was starting to think it was Wednesday today.
Were you? I often lose track of the days. I've got it up above my head. They actually have the day on the clock, so I can keep it straight.
Good.
It is very Tuesday, good. Right?
Yes, it's Tuesday. We'll stick with
now
that.
Now that you mention it, yeah. Harvey, Mom, I haven't seen you in a long time.
Yeah, man, good to see you.
So, nice. Harvey, I got to ask you, most importantly, what do you think the Packers' chances of winning the Super Bowl this year are?
You know what? A few weeks ago, I told my friend Bill Moyers that he said to me, so what do you think of the Packers' chances for the Super Bowl? And I said, well, I think we'll have a fun season. I can't guarantee anything. However, I think I like these young guys. I like the spirit on the team. I know that Rodgers was complaining, but I don't know. Maybe it's because football's here now and I'm feeling really good about it. So I think there's a good chance. I really do.
And Harvey, do you agree with me that the Bears still suck? We do play out on WCPT 820 AM, so consider your answer.
I will tell you, my wife has a theory. She watches sports avidly, and she said it's always good when a team picks up a player from an antagonist team. And I'm forgetting now who it is, but we have somebody from the Bears now, correct?
Got to see the final roster before I believe it.
No, that's true. That's true. But I'm thinking if that's the case, because what it is she says those folks, they play for revenge. And I figure, you know, if you got a good spirited team and you got one guy playing for revenge, you're okay.
All right, man. Well, let's talk about playing for a little revenge here in the great state of Wisconsin. Harvey, have you been watching the political campaigns unwind? I mean, we got a gubernatorial race and they kind of went for blood. They took out Becky Clayfish. They trumped her ass. And this woman who had been running for governor for 4, 8, 12 years, effectively, I mean, her whole adult life, Rebecca Clayfish, had been positioning herself for this time in history. And then this outsider flies in from Connecticut, drops $50 million, and beats her. A, it's got to be crushing to her soul. I feel bad for you, Becky, kind of. And B, there will be no reconciliation between the party. You know what I mean? The Becky Clayfish wing of this party is not exactly embracing the Tim Michaels Trump endorsing.
But wait, has she endorsed Evers yet?
No, I haven't heard that.
Not Evers, not yet.
But I have not heard any sort of clear endorsement from Clayfish for Michaels. And I don't think we will.
Let me ask you this. Do you know, can you explain to me? I heard something. I don't want to say anything just yet. I heard something. Do you know why Trump endorsed Michaels and not Clayfish?
Because the elder Clayfish daughter went to homecoming with Justice Brian Hagedorn's son, and Rebecca Clayfish had tweeted out the photo hey, Justice, hey, Ghidorah, these kids clean up nice. Something of that sort. I paraphrase.
Exactly. I just heard it last week. I didn't realize that because I kept saying, why is this the case? And it's just nice to know that Trump really knows how to hate. And for just and for really important reasons. I mean, come on, a prom or a date. I mean, that matters. And it's, you know, just really quite wonderful. In fact, it's kind of amazing that he didn't necessarily try to find her an alternate date, at least.
Well, he probably thought he'd be dating her in 10 years, or at least he hoped for such a thing. My understanding, I know it's, I just saw the face made by Evan. My understanding is a lot of bad blood. And the fact that the Michaels campaign was circulating the photos of the Clayfish daughter went a little beyond attacking the candidate. So there's some bad blood going on there. My understanding is there will be no reconciliation between the, you know, who knows, maybe Rantham will come out and endorse Michaels, but I don't think you're going to see Clayfish do so.
I haven't found it yet. What's the polling show regarding Evers and Michaels?
The polling shows currently Evers up by about 2, the Marquette University Law School.
Just two.
Within the margin of error.
But Michael says his gut tells him he's up 5 to 10 points because Republican voters lied to the pollsters, and therefore he's got a healthy lead over Tony. His gut tells him that, even though Mandela's up 7 on Ron Johnson in the same polling.
Yeah, this will be interesting because, you know, you often think about the top position having coattails. And I've even wondered to what extent the coattails might reverse, you know? So candidates running for terms in the assembly or the Senate of the United States, if there's any chance of that kind of uplift.
Well, if you look at the numbers in 2018, Harvey, and it's an interesting question you pose, Tammy Baldwin, a very progressive lesbian, you know, candidate, doesn't seem like the perfect fit for the state of Wisconsin in this very purple state. But Tammy Baldwin crushed Dominic's girl, Leah Vukmer. I like to call her Nurse Ratchet. But Nurse Ratchet got beat by about 100,000+ votes. But Tony Evers only beat Scott Walker on the very same ballot and the very same day by about 31,000 votes. So the strangest thing about the 2018 election is there was 100,000 Scott Walker voters that also voted for Tammy Baldwin.
That's fascinating. I did not realize that. I hadn't thought of that.
I cannot see that playing out again in this race. Although, I mean, theoretically, if you've got Mandela Barnes and he's the U.S. Senate candidate, obviously the same scenario of you know, the Senate race being somewhat independent of the chief executive race here in the state of Wisconsin. Yeah. But if Mandela's up 7 and Tony's in the margin of error, theoretically, Mandela could win the Senate race and we could have a Governor Michaels on the same ballot.
You know what? You just gave me an upset stomach.
Thanks, Crudy. He does that to me all the time, Harvey.
Oh, my God. You know, seriously speaking, I cannot believe we have come to this from the Republican Party. I mean, you know, I should be able to believe it because Walker was so abysmal, truly abysmal. But this guy, Michael, seems to be, if it's possible, a step beyond even Walker. Okay. It's just astonishing to me. And, you know, people I remember in some elections previously, people talked about leaving the United States for Canada if Trump gets elected. I mean, seriously,
I've threatened.
I love the state of Wisconsin, but if we ended up with a Governor Michaels and this Republican controlled legislature, there's good reason to think about, I don't know, moving to Minnesota even. God, you know?
But we've already
And I live in Green Bay where the Packers are. So it would mean really a smack in the face that would just, oh, God.
You and my wife, Harvey, making these threats if there's a Governor Michaels. And I would say, God forbid, I don't want to see it happen, but God forbid that were to happen. We've already lived through that for 8 years. And I got a daughter who's 27 living on the West Coast. And I'm not clear if she wants to move home. You know what I mean? You think at some point kids are going to move home. They're going to want to raise kids here in the upper Midwest they grew up. And I am less convinced in a state where she would have no abortion rights, in a state where Republican governance could take us back to 1849. I don't know that my daughter would want to live in a state like that, or my wife, but my fear is if all the good people move out of the state of Wisconsin, this state becomes further and further red, and my once beloved Wisconsin descends into the governance of Tim Michaels and Robin Voss. Gotta fight, buddy.
You're making me feel guilty for even considering the possibility.
Come on, man. This is our state. I'm not going to leave it just because some jackass is going to elect. We stay and we fight, Harvey. But I want to get Harvey K., our fine guest. I want to get your thoughts historically. You brought up, I can't believe we're dealing with the GOP, the Republican Party, which is now the mega party. Curdy drugged me to the last Trump rally in Waukesha, Harvey. And we heard Tim Michaels say, you know, the Republican Party was reborn in Trump Tower in 2016, right? And it made me think, well, first they murdered the original Republican Party, now this is the mega party. But now we see how this continues to evolve, and they continue to defend this president as it gets worse and worse and worse for him. They're no longer the party of law and order, as Curdy mentioned with the abortion stuff. They want to take us back to the 1800s before women even had the right to vote and to determine for themselves what should happen to their body. Harvey, I mean, historically speaking, do you see this party continuing, or do you see it perhaps, fading away and something else coming in?
Fading away, it's hard to see because these folks are so committed. Okay, we used to call them for a while, a few years ago, like a cult, but that was being nice. Actually, that was being nice because really, I mean, we're talking about outright neo-fascism in many a case. Okay, I mean, Critty didn't even mention the fact that, Michaels is prepared to sell AR-15s to teenagers. I mean, we'll have this image of that kid who came up from Illinois and started shooting people and killing people in southeastern Wisconsin. You can imagine all of a sudden kids who are just utterly fed up with the way things are for the future of a generation, just letting loose. Seriously speaking, this state would be all the scarier. I mean, seriously speaking, consider the fact they've broken up the University of Wisconsin in many ways. It's not the university system it was. Okay, they've taken away the collective bargaining rights of public employees, and we were the first state to truly accord such rights to public employees, public workers. They've basically, they're on the verge of truly banning a woman's right to choose. Because right now, of course, we have an attorney general and a governor who said they won't apply the law that's on the books from the past. I mean, it's just a truly horrific kind of vision of what this state could become. Look, it's not like we've always been this politically innocent, progressive state. We had Joe McCarthy after all. But Joe McCarthy, fortunately, was not the governor of Wisconsin. He was a U.S. senator. Okay, so I mean, seriously, I am afraid of what could happen, and I can't believe that this state will literally place in office Michaels over Evers. Though I know that there are parts of the state that have no affection, no love, and really do despise the very word Democrat.
Let me ask you a question, Dr. Harvey Gay, Kay, our fine guest. Harvey, I have spent a lot of time this summer driving the state of Wisconsin, listening to all the AM radio stations. You're in a different market than we are. I hear Milwaukee, I hear Madison, and I see the commercials for Mandela Barnes, and I see the commercials for Tony Evers, but I hear the ads for Ron Johnson and Tim Michaels. This state is filthy with those ads all across the radio dial. I don't see the Democrats matching them on the talk radio, the country music, the airwaves. Harvey, I fear the same $15 million advertising buy that Michaels flew in and did over 90 days that helped him beat Rebecca Clayfish is going to be persuasive enough to help him win outstate by large enough margins. Dane County cannot possibly overvote enough to overcome margins outstate.
Yeah, no, seriously speaking, there's one ad in particular. I don't need to recount it very much, but it opens up as if it's an ad from Andela Barnes, and then they flip the switch, and you come to realize that they're using it to really rile up the Republican base, right? It's, you know, it's Mandela Barnes, it's the squad from the Congress, and all of a sudden, you know, it's Ron Johnson is going to save us from the socialists and their big spending. I mean, right? You know that one, I'm sure. And that one just angers me no end. But the question isn't about just those ads. The question is, where are the Democratic ads that will go for the jugular, period? Okay, where are they? And that's what I want to see.
Or here on the radio. Harvey K, I know we're short.
Or there on the radio, yeah. Hey, get him going. You bet. You bet.
Carvey.
Absolutely.
You got like 8 more minutes for us, buddy?
Sure, I'm with you.
I know you got other interviews.
Misery loves company, right?
Yeah. Okay. More Harvey K, more misery, more company, and perhaps you as well on the phones. 844-967-2789.
To the Devil's Advocates.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. Be sure to check us out on the socials, on Twitter at Devil Radio, and of course on the Facebooks at the Devil's Advocates Radio.
Dominic, the finest of guests, we've got Dr. Harvey K., Professor Emeritus, University of Wisconsin, Green Bay. And Harvey, you often come calling with a populist message. Do you think the Democrats ever hear it? I mean, I like the way Mandela Barnes is talking about the fact that, you know, he knows the price of a gallon of milk. But I was out at the Trump rally and I did meet a guy in the line. And this guy told me he was a union iron worker. And he basically said that Republicans are becoming the party of the working stiff. And I said, Republican union? That doesn't seem to go together. You know, the Republicans are so anti-union, right to work. I mean, hell, even Michaels is running away from his own corporations' prior advocacy for unions. So, Harvey, are we lost without a galvanizing populist message as Democrats?
Yes. And you're right. It is the one thing that's been missing from the Democratic Party nationally and in the state of Wisconsin is that populist message. I mean, look, to be honest, I mean, I'm very glad we have a candidate like Mandela Barnes now, you know, running for the U.S. Senate. But it is the case that there really was not the kind of campaign until now that Mandela Barnes could have run. I mean, look, people out in northern and western Wisconsin, farmers included, want to hear a message that tells them that their areas matter, their regions matter, that there's reason to believe that Democrats will respond to the need for investment, the increased wages, et cetera. But especially, I think it's imperative that the Democrats get out there, and we have time for this, that they get out there with ads that say, think about the last 30 years, 40 years. Think about the degree to which you have seen this go and this go and this go. And then you lay them all out. In terms of living standards, the price of higher education, the quality of education, all of that, and ask yourself who is responsible, and then lay out the Walker years, okay, and the threat of something like that again. Let him even apologize. It's about time we become the party of working people. Because you're right. Workers have moved away from the Democratic Party. I don't believe they're at all necessarily committed to Republicans, but they don't necessarily see reason to become Democrats with a capital D once again. That's what the Democrats have not been doing. Honestly, I don't even think I've seen an ad for Evers at all up here. And I can't tell you, I watch a lot of, you know, mainstream TV, but I don't think I've seen an Evers ad. I'm on YouTube a lot. I don't think I mean, it's flooded with Johnson ads and Michaels ads.
Yeah. Folks, you're listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. That is Harvey Kay. He is a professor emeritus at UWGB joining us. Harvey, it's always fun, man. What's your take on, you know, the Republicans are certainly going to talk about policy. They're going to try to ignore the insurrection and the attempted coup on this country. And they're going to go after these, you know, culture war issues, right? Transgender, LGBT rights, you know, gay marriage, all, you know, that kind of Roe v. Wade. These are all the issues that they can think they can divide Americans on. How effective do you think that Republicans have been on those issues so far? And what do you think the Dems can do to, you know, kind of push back on that and, you know, negate the push that they have?
Honestly, the reason the Republicans have been so successful with the culture buttons, you might say, is because the Democrats gave up the economic populist message that made them the majority party. Okay. In other words, it's the fact that if the Democrats are no longer the populist party, the party of the people, then most working people are going to be independent minded. And if nobody is talking to their real material needs and aspirations, they'll respond to cultural kinds of things. You know, it's like I once mentioned this here. Back in the 1970s, where all this began, they went at the Republicans in unison with big business went after labor unions, even more than that, at that time than they went after anything like women's rights or the rights of people of color. Their first and primary target was labor unions. Now, when the Democrats failed to rise to the occasion and defend unions aggressively, I think especially of the likes of Jimmy Carter, what happened? Well, if you can't vote for your wages and you can't in solidarity fight for your wages, what you're going to do is you're going to vote for the guy who promises to lower your taxes, even if he'll lower the taxes of the rich more. In other words, you will defend your wallet in hopes you might get some tax money back since you can't get improved wages. And keep in mind, the working class has not seen a rise in their real wages and standard of living since the 1970s. So if the Democrats are not going to fight in those terms, you'll vote for somebody who'll give you a tax, even if it's pennies. You'll vote just to get those pennies back. Okay. So what about this election run? Well, I actually have not seen cultural issues as the thing Republicans are using. They're using the Johnson ads are all about inflation, spending and inflation. And the Democrats have got to respond by moving the subject back to these are the kinds of things that working people need. These are the kinds of things we intend to pursue. Okay, period. I think I've spoken before here about an economic bill of rights, guaranteed jobs with living wages. Okay, healthcare. I mean, these are the kinds of questions that have been on the agenda here in Wisconsin for years, but have been pushed aside as a consequence of the Walker years.
Harvey, most recently, threats to democracy have overtaken cost of living as the voters' top issue for this country. Do you think that's one that the Democrats should be going for the jugular on, as you expressed?
Absolutely. Look, back in 2017 when Trump won the presidency, I wrote a piece. Basically, it was about what I called creeping authoritarianism, that beginning in the late 1970s, the Republicans and big business declared war on the democratic achievements of the 1930s and the 1960s. And that war has been pursued for 45 years now. And unfortunately, the Democrats, led by Clinton, originally Carter, went along with that war, you might say, on working people's democratic rights. Look, Democrats should go after that. They should play over and over again the January 6th tape and say, these are the folks who believe that this is how we operate a democracy. This is Wisconsin. This is a great state of Wisconsin. And all the rights that we've won need to be restored. And the Democrats need to make sure that they identify with the redemption and renewal and enhancement of democracy. And that includes industrial democracy, the right of workers to organize and bargain collectively.
I got one last question for you, Dr. Harvey Kay. Yes or no answer. Should Aaron Rodgers play in the preseason against the Chiefs?
This Friday night against the Chiefs. Here's the thing. Maybe love wants revenge. How's that?
I like it. Dr. Harvey K., thank you so much for joining us. Come back with
us. Thank you.
Hour two of the Devil's Advocates is next.
Thanks, Harvey.
But I cannot emphasize that there must be no violence.
Oh, he's going to go get a weapon, everybody.
Everybody's doing it.